Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm pleased to have you with me for the next half hour as we listen to the second of a three-part program on the life and times of 74-year-old Val Waller. We learned quite a bit about Val last week, but the two main events that stand out are the independent streak that seemed to have resulted from the strength of a mother and from losing her father in a prisoner of war camp during World War II, and the second event, her becoming an air hostess with TAA during the 1950s. This has been a fabulous story, and we learn more about her adventures with TAA before learning how she met her husband-to-be John, and we learn how she came to marry him and live in New Guinea, another adventure in itself. But now, here's Val talking about some of the idiosyncrasies of pilots.
I had to take lunch up to the captain, and it was on blue plastic plates, and he said to me, "That's absolute garbage," and opened the cockpit window and threw it out the window.
I'd like to see them do that today.
Well, I mean, of course, you couldn't open a cockpit in a DC-3.
He threw it out the window. Well, that must have made you feel terrific.
I hadn't prepared them. But he was a wonderful skipper. Bob Lachlan, his name was. And he was so... Now, perhaps I'd better not mention his name in case somebody blames him for throwing out a TAA plate.
I think after all these years, he could be forgiven.
There are a lot of stories about him because he had a slight stutter, but he was just a lovely man. Like most of the pilots, they were absolutely wonderful, very funny men. And that was my first flight, and I did a few others, and then TAA, in their wisdom, said, "Well, sorry, you're going back to Melbourne." I'd been in Brisbane 3 weeks. "You've done your training. You're going back to Melbourne. Your first flight out of Melbourne will be on Christmas Eve, and you'll be taking a DC-3 down to Launceston." And this, you know, suddenly I'd come back to Melbourne, which was a strange port because I hadn't met any of the staff there or anything.
I should ask you here or clarify, of course, in those days when we talked about Melbourne Airport, it was Essendon, wasn't it? Not Tullamarine.
Yes, the old Essendon, the little, yes, a very small terminal. And so I got on the aircraft and told everybody, "This is my first flight," and they were so helpful. Everyone was really wonderful. But the first officer came on and said, "Now, the first thing you've got to do is check every rivet on the wings, on each side." And I said, I don't remember that, you know. And anyway, this man in uniform came along, and I thought he was the traffic officer. And I said, "Oh, look, I've forgotten the serviettes. Can you run over and get them for me?" And he said, "No trouble, love." And he went and came back with the serviettes and said, "Oh, by the way, I'm Captain..."
"So your first flight with the first captain, go get me the serviettes, please, while I count the rivets."
But he was another fantastic man, and he thought it was terribly funny that I'd sent him, even though it was only a DC-3, he was captain.
He was the captain.
Didn't ask the captain to do much. And that was a fantastic flight, and I got in about 10 o'clock on Christmas Eve on such a high because...
Of course.
Everything went well, and the passengers were fantastic, and the crew were fantastic, and the first officer, his mother lived near me, so, you know, we became friends, and that's what TA was like. You had friends who were pilots, you had friends who were bus drivers, traffic officers. It was one big happy family. Everybody got on so well. I had 2 years in Melbourne, flying nearly 2.5 years, flying to Perth, Darwin, Brisbane, mainly to Tasmania and back, and graduated from DC-3s to DC-4s and DC-4s, Convairs, Viscounts, and most of the flying was done in Viscounts in those days.
So as the planes are getting bigger, the cabin crew are getting greater in number, aren't they?
Only two. We only had two. That was the most
group
we had, yes. And we'd fly over to Perth and there'd only be the two of us. We'd leave Melbourne at 1 o'clock and get into Perth at 6 o'clock. And then we'd have a couple of days in Perth, which was fantastic. We had our own hostel there and we used to stay there and have 2 days of relaxation. Perth's a lovely city. And then fly back, leave at 11 o'clock and get back to Melbourne about 8 o'clock the next morning. And sometimes there'd be headwinds and we'd have to stop at Kalgoorlie or Ceduna sometimes, depending on the headwinds, because you couldn't make it from Adelaide to Perth in one go.
Oh, was this to refuel?
Yes, so
to refuel. So the headwinds meant you had to refuel. Mm. Oh, right. Yes. Gee, it's like the Wild West.
It is, yes. And we had the DC-4 went up to Darwin, and I once flew a DC-4 from Alice Springs to Wilpena Pound.
Now, hang on. First of all, how did this come about?
Well, the captain let me.
He gave up his seat.
He gave up his seat and let me. Well, it wasn't. I mean, we took off after of Alex Springs. I
yes.
didn't actually.
No.
And so I flew the aircraft, which was so fantastic. Although the other hostess said it was a pretty rough trip.
Oh, she's just jealous.
Yes. And in those days, of course, you had sick bags, and sometimes going into Alice Springs, because it was so hot and the air conditioning on DC-4s wasn't all that good, half the aircraft would be ill and you'd be handing out sick bags.
Gosh, yes.
But I learned that if you put a piece of lemon in your mouth or a piece of ice, you didn't get sick.
That's right.
Mm. And so I could dispense as many sick bags as I wanted to without
yourself ever being
without
ill.
Being ill. Mm.
Amazing.
Mm.
Did you ever have any times flying where you were fearful, for whatever reason?
Yes, one, when on Anzac Eve, someone rang and said there was a bomb on our aircraft. We were going from Melbourne to Sydney, and the captain called me up and he said, "Now, you're not to tell anyone, but we've been told there's a bomb on board."
Mm.
And so we have to turn back to Melbourne. Don't even tell the other hostesses.
Gosh.
Mm. And then eventually he told me I could tell them, and I told them, and they said, "Oh, Val, you're making that up. Don't be so stupid."
But you did turn back.
We turned back, yes. And there was one woman who was really nervous about flying, and as we got into Melbourne and we had to land well away from the terminal, and I just said to everybody, you know, there's a slight malfunction. If you all leave the aircraft as quickly as possible. And people are sort of, and the captain said to me, "You and I are the last to get off." So I'm trying to shepherd all these people off, and they're saying, "Do you think it's going to be cold out there? Should I take my coat?"
And the bomb's possibly ticking away in the background.
Lady, just, you might not need it. Just go, please. Anyway, they checked the whole aircraft and decided that it was okay. Or get back on board. So that's what we did. But in those days, there were quite a few bomb hoaxes.
Mm.
And the fact that it was Anzac Eve, I think somebody thought it might be a good idea.
Mm. Very funny joke.
And a couple of times in a DC-6, we had to feather an engine because there was trouble with some malfunction in the engine. But most aircraft can fly quite safely on three engines, and that's no problem. And another time we had a trip across Bass Strait, and it was very rough weather, and instead of taking an hour, it took us 2 hours to get from Launceston to Melbourne, and we tossed and we turned, and we could see a Fokker Friendship below us, which was also tossing and turning, and everybody was sick except one 96-year-old man who'd never flown in his life before.
Goodness.
And he said, "What's the matter? Why are people being sick?" And I was saying, "It's a bit rough." And he said, "Isn't it always like this?" "No, it's not usually like this."
The innocence of ignorance.
Yes, you see. And he was 96 and he just thought, well, that's what flying's like.
Amazing.
Mm. And that was a bit scary,
yes,
that flight.
Yes, sure it was.
Mm. And then towards the end of the time, I noticed a lot of the girls who'd been flying a long time were very nervy and they were listening for engine sounds. And I became a bit like that after
Is that right?
4.5 years. You know, there's something wrong with engine number 3. It doesn't sound good, you know. And even when John and I were married and we flew back to New Guinea, and I said to him, I don't like the sound of that engine. We'd been on our honeymoon, we were back to living in New Guinea, and he said, why? And I, oh, no, there's something wrong with it. And then they had to feather one of the engines, and he thought I was so brilliant that I had picked that there's something wrong with the engine. But you do get used to the noise.
The sounds, that's right, when they're different. Yes.
Yes.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
Did you ever fly with anybody of any noteworthiness?
Oh, well, Paul Anka was on my flight.
You know, right. I certainly do know Paul
and
Anka.
And Neil Sedaka.
Right.
And a few. I mean, there was Ron Randall, but I think he's sort of, not many people know him. He was an Australian actor who went over to America. And of course all the politicians.
Are most of these people well behaved? I don't mean like playing up, but I mean are they demanding, or are they
well,
good to the
some staff? Politicians are really quite rude and, you know, sort of full of their own importance, but Sir Robert Menzies, who was Mr. Menzies in those days, did not speak to air hostesses. You had to communicate with his wife. Harold Holt was the loveliest, loveliest man you could ever meet. He knew you by name. Truly. And he always pleased to see you. And Athol Townley, who was the Minister for the Department of Civil Aviation in those days, he was really wonderful. He'd walk on board, say, give my seat to a passenger, I'm going up the front, and he would sit up in the cockpit. He was a fantastic person. And Arthur Caldwell, who was member of the opposition.
Labour, yes.
Labour, yes. He was a lovely man. We met him in Perth once. We'd taken him over to Perth and we met him in the street and he said, what are you doing? And we said, we're going to the pictures. We don't know where the picture theatres are. And he said, oh, I'll take you to one. So he turned around and took us to the nearest picture
theatre.
Amazing.
This is, I don't know if he was then, but he became leader of the opposition.
Yes. And
so
just
that's amazing.
A lovely, normal
just
man.
Just down to earth.
Yeah, like Harold Holt. He was,
yes.
He was such fun to talk to and always recognised you, but some of them really thought they were terribly important.
Now, your husband, John, did you meet him while you were an air hostess?
Yes, well, in 1960, TAA started flying to New Guinea, and so I had to move up to Sydney to do the... I said I'd like to do it and fly to New Guinea, and I was actually on the first TAA flight from Leigh to Sydney, and I did that for 2 years, flying up, and on one trip, a friend of mine in Leigh introduced me to this young Englishman, or he was going to introduce me, and he said I was 26 at the time, and he said, I think he's about 24, and I said, well, he's far too young for me, I'm not interested,
of course
so
not.
Don't bother.
Right.
And we'd get up to Leigh, and then we were supposed to go and have rest for the day because we'd flown all night, but I can't sleep during the daytime, so I would go shopping.
Mm.
And I was just ready to go shopping, and this friend turned up with this young man and said, she'll be out soon because she doesn't sleep. See, we had our own house up there. The hostesses had their own house, and there was a veranda out the front, and they were sitting on the veranda waiting for me to come out because I wasn't going to sleep. And they stayed such a long time. In the end, I thought, look, I'll go out and just say, no, sorry, I've got other things to do.
Yes, yes.
And I took one look at John, and that was it.
That was it?
That was it.
Wow.
Yes. And we used to have 3 days there some weeks, and this was a 3-day stopover, so we went out to quite a few places, and he'd borrowed a little Volkswagen, and we went down to the Leigh Club and had a few drinks, and then he said, well, we'll go for a swim. So we got into the Volkswagen, and I said, have you been swimming already? And he said, no. Why? And I said, because there's a towel in the back of the car. And he said, oh, this is not my car. We'd got in the wrong Volkswagen and started it up and driven off in it. And you wouldn't think you could do that in a car, would you?
No.
So we had to return to the Leigh Club and swap Volkswagens. But we saw one another for all of that trip, you know. Everybody went to the Leigh Club.
What was John doing for work? What
was he was skipper of a small ship. He'd come.
Oh, okay.
He'd been... He actually was in the Merchant Navy, left school and went into the Merchant Navy, and then he left there and went to Kenya, became a policeman to try and control the Mau Mau at the time, and he had 2 years there. And his mother had moved to New Zealand from England, so he went out to New Zealand and he worked there in a furniture shop, renovating furniture. And then there was an offer of a trip to New Guinea to deliver a small ship up to New Guinea. So he said, well, I'll do that.
Mm.
And he got up there and they offered him the job as skipper. So he took this small ship around the islands, and that's what he was doing when
I
met him. Mm. And we met on that occasion, and I saw him on the next trip up, and he proposed, and 3 months later, that was on April the 10th, and we were married on July the 11th.
You had a thing for captains, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Listen to older voices. Revisiting Through Recollections.
That was a whirlwind romance.
It was a whirlwind. I mean, we wrote a couple of letters in between, but that was really the only contact we'd had.
Mm.
And, of course, everyone warned me that was a very foolish thing to do.
Well, it was a very foolish thing to have left the bank, remember?
Well, it was very foolish to have left the bank.
Mm.
But it turned out to be not quite so foolish.
I suspected not.
No, so...
So where did you live when she got married? Because you're still... Did you resign or were you still...
Oh, no, I had to resign because you weren't allowed to fly when you were married.
Why, does your body chemistry change or something?
No, they thought it was bad for relationships.
I think
they sort of thought that some of the pilots played up a bit, so some of the hostesses might play up a bit too. But I must say that the majority of pilots were really fantastic men and... They'd play up if somebody wanted to play up with them, but on the whole, they were lovely. Good fun, absolutely ridiculous. One of their conversational gambits was, well, shall we start talking about sex straight away or wait till it crops up in the conversation?
Good opening line.
Yes. But that, I mean, all they did was talk about it.
Yes, you know, of course.
They were really fantastic. And there were a couple, one of whom was called the Silver Stallion and the other one who was called Captain Sin. But they were two of the loveliest men you could ever meet. And they looked after me so well. When I was sent up to Sydney to fly to New Guinea, I was made... check hostess on the New Guinea run, which upset some of the...
What does that mean?
That means that I had to train the girls who were going to New Guinea, but also fly with them and write reports on their performance.
Mm-hmm.
And this put the noses of some of the Sydney check hostesses out of joint,
right.
You see. So they started giving me... trips like overnight Newcastle, which nobody wanted, or ground duty, which check hostesses didn't do. But when I came down to Melbourne, I was called into the office in Melbourne and the hostess port supervisor said, I've been looking at your rosters. You're having a bad time, aren't you? And I said, yes. And she said, look, my advice is whatever they give you, say you love it. If they give you an overnight Newcastle, say it's great fun. If they give you ground duty, say that's the best ground duty you've ever had to do. And she said, and I've told all the Melbourne pilots they're to look out for you. So if I flew with a Melbourne pilot, they would say, oh, we've been given instructions, we have to look after our little girl. Make sure nobody's nasty to you. And they were absolutely fantastic, you know, because I was having a tough time.
Did it work saying those things to... You know, when you were giving these unpalatable jobs and you...
Oh, yes, yes, it stopped. It stopped.
Is that right?
Yes, and I did have an overnight in Newcastle and there were strong winds, crosswinds in Newcastle and the aircraft couldn't land. Mm. So the passengers were sent up by bus and we were told we could go home and we'd have to go fly up in the morning and fly back to pick up the passengers in Newcastle. So the crew and I went to a party. We had a lovely time. So came and said, oh, that was a great overlook party. And we didn't have to fly up till the next morning. And I might tell you that the crew tied back the door of the... it was in a DC-3, and they tied back the door. And then they kept moving the tail of the aircraft so that I actually fell on the floor. And every time I tried to stand up,
They'd take
the tail down and I'd fall back on the floor. And they were killing themselves laughing.
Of course they were.
And, of course, they had the door open so they could see me on the floor trying to get up, threatening them.
But all in good fun.
All in good fun.
Yes.
And, you know, so it stopped. I didn't have to do overnight Newcastles. I didn't have to do ground duty. But it really, none of it worried me very much. It was just a bit of the... attitude in the office when I went in.
Mm.
But the pilots, as I said, were so great. Didn't matter what these women did, and they stopped eventually.
With all these great experiences and all these great adventures and great people, you meet John, who has an immediate and very strong impact upon you, enough that within a very short time you get married. Therefore, you as you said, you were forced by regulations to resign as an air hostess. Was the fact that you were with John and married to him, did that buffer satisfactorily not being a hostess, or did you miss it for a while?
Well, I missed the company, but I was getting to after 4.5 years, which is a long time for anyone to fly. Usually it was 2 years.
Is that right? Mm,
very few lasted longer than that. I was getting to the stage where it was the same thing over and
tedious.
Over again, you know.
Yes.
So John and I married, and we went up. We lived in Rabaul for a while, and so for the first few months I didn't see him because he went off to sea.
He was still, yes.
And then...
What was life like for you then? I mean, this is a strange country now.
Yeah, oh, yes.
I invite you to join Val and myself next week for another 30 minutes of engrossing stories, where we can both laugh with her as well as share in her sadness. And I can guarantee you'll be most impressed, if not totally engrossed, in her story next week on Listen to Older Voices.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.